From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Election Day is just 5 days away, and the race for the Boise mayor's seat has been heated. There are four candidates hoping to get the job, and we wanted to hear from all of them. So we're sitting down today with each one to find out their vision for Idaho's capital city. So let's begin today with former police chief Mike Masterson. He retired more than 8 years ago, but after writing op-eds in the Idaho Statesman pushing back against current mayor Lauren McClain, Masterson said he started hearing from people wanting him to run for mayor. So after some reflection, he launched his campaign, and he sat down with our Morning Edition host George Prentice to talk about growth, parks, and the budget over at City Hall. So let's take a listen.
As an outsider, it appears as if some change is necessary within the Boise Police Department. To the degree of how much change will happen or should happen, I guess we're going to find out. But can you speak to that? Do you think change is necessary? Some change is necessary?
I think change in leadership in City Hall is necessary.
Okay, but can we focus on the police department?
You bet. But it starts at City Hall because, you know, I tell people right now the Ada County Sheriff, Meridian, and Garden City have no vacancies in their department. No vacancies. That's hard-hitting when the Boise Police Department has at least 30. You know, why is it? Well, I think it's because, number one, we haven't had the stability of leadership in the department. We've had a lot of adverse incidents that have occurred out there with the former chief that the officers have been demoralized. Why do you want to go to work for a department
former
that treats
chief
you like that? Yes. Why do you want to go for a work for the mayor that doesn't support you? So there is changes that need to be made. I mean, first of all, we need to hire those 30 officers, and I need to sit down with the police chief and talk about the different strategies that we can expedite that process. Because if we don't have all of those people that are authorized, we're not fulfilling all of our mission. We have to take from the vacancies that exist and make sure that we have patrol officers that respond to priority and emergency calls out there. That means we're not doing something else. We're not doing traffic enforcement. We're not solving problems in neighborhoods. We're not on bicycles downtown. We're not on motorcycles doing traffic enforcement. We need to solve that issue to get back up to the number of officers that mayor and council have authorized so that we can do our work.
But is it your sense that the policies and or practices currently in the department are good enough?
Oh, I think, I have never relied on the status quo. I always think that there's room for improvement. I want to look at what is going on with the rest of the country and how other large cities are attracting and retaining their employees.
In the event hosted by City Club, there was a question and some conversation in regards to matters that many may consider to be national issues. In particular, Mayor McClain's very public remarks in regards to abortion restrictions in the state of Idaho. And she doubled down on that and said, you bet, that matters to me and it matters to, in her words, the values of our city. And correct me if I'm wrong, what I heard from you was that may not always be the place for a mayor.
George, you're absolutely right. I don't think it's the place for a mayor to get involved in state and federal political matters. We have enough problems here in Boise that need to be solved. Senator Risch isn't going to solve our problems, and Representative Brooke Green is not going to solve our problems. They deal with those issues at the state and federal level. You know, I just can't see as a mayor standing up and telling another legislative body, I'm not going to follow your rules. I am a guy who has enforced the rules, mm-hmm. Some of them that I don't like over 40 years, but that's not my job to do that.
But let me just pause you there, because I think what she was saying was she was inclined not to have the Boise Police Department follow up and investigate and or arrest a caregiver and or a woman who may be running afoul of Idaho's abortion restrictions.
She absolutely said that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's up for a mayor to pick and choose what laws we're going to follow. I don't want to create a law as a mayor and then have my council members come out and say that I don't agree with this law. We're not going to follow it. It's just absolutely wrong. Listen, I have talked about this issue. I have daughters. I have talked about how wrong it is for politics to insert themselves in medicine and women's issues. But it's not my job to lobby citizens one way or the other in support or in opposition to a law. I mean, you go up to the state legislature and you voice your opinion up there. My job as the mayor is to make sure that you have a safe downtown, you have adequate park system, you have fire protection, that we're building appropriately to accommodate our needs. And I just think that that tends to be more divisive in our community than bringing us together.
There are only so many hours in the day, only so many hours in a year. There's only so much money in a city budget and only so much you can ask taxpayers to fund projects, proposals, departments, et cetera. Where is the current administration spending too much or too little time or too much or too little money on things that you think ought to be or ought not to be?
Well, I'll start with the 60% increase in her own budget in 3 years in the mayor's office. 60% is an extraordinary number. It involves deputy chiefs of staff now. It involves community engagement. It involves a whole array of services there. I want to get back to cutting down the bureaucracy so that when a citizen has a problem, they don't have to go through three levels of bureaucracy to get somebody in the mayor's office to solve their problem.
So you would shrink the mayor's budget?
That's one. You know, I need to take a look at where the spending is occurring. We've had a great deal of money that came through the American Rescue Act money with COVID. I know we spent $14 million for housing and homeless issues. I know we spent $10 million on climate change issues. We had a good time over the last 3 years with money that was coming in. And now the faucet's going to be shut off. We're not getting the temporary rental assistance money or these other funds that are coming in. It's going to make it a little bit more difficult. The major assets that we got, particularly our park systems, came from women in our community. Mm-hmm. Julia Davis, Catherine Albertson, Etna Harris, yep. Marianne Williams. I mean, all of those parks are great. We got a golf course that I used to go to up at Quail Hollow that was donated to the city.
Right.
You know, so we need to be working more with those members of our community who want to enrich the lives of others through parks here.
So you would advocate for more parks or just to expand that portfolio?
I think we have to take care of the parks that we have now. There
okay.
are a number of parks.
But there are folks in West Boise, for instance, who would like to have a little bit more green space.
And I understand the importance of connecting some of our parks to 15 minutes from neighborhoods and other mm-hmm. places, but mm-hmm. we have far too many parks in this city, particularly in the southwest part, the McGurdio Park, that are promised, but we're not doing anything for development. The Etna Harris Park down mm-hmm. at Harris Ranch has not been developed. So I'd like to sit down with the Parks Department and the Parks Commission and see exactly what we're looking at for a strategic plan, and then work with the Parks Department to go out and find the resources that are necessary. Yeah, some of them may be through taxpayer money, but we have a very giving community. What can we do to bring these improvements to the outlying areas as well?
If you were to be elected, you would inherit quite a bit, including the new zoning code rewrite, which goes into effect December 1st. You have indicated that you weren't a fan of the end product and how we got there. That said, it will be codified on December 1st. I mean, what do you do with that? Because you have a city council that voted for it unanimously. You have a PDS department that they're basically the architects of that. How do you unwind that?
Yeah, well, I'll point out that the city council that voted for it was three hand-picked council members from the mayor mm-hmm. And was pushing the mayor's agenda for that. I thought the process was too aggressive. Now, just don't ask me. Ask the thousands of citizens that are up in arms because they didn't think their voices were heard or their questions were answered. And I'm hearing those concerns, and they're occurring on State Street. They're occurring in our most affordable neighborhoods where people moving here can still come here, buy that old house, renovate it, and have that type of promise that we have made to our citizens in terms of living in a quiet neighborhood and safety. I just think it's gone too far. So as mayor, I will initiate a review of that. I will expedite the review. I won't wait a year. There's no affordable component in this. I mean, it's been talked about, and the mayor's trumpeted, a few hundred new homes that may happen as a result of this. And I'm not sure homes means houses. Homes could mean apartment and duplexes. And even building at today's prices, You can't tell me that with the cost of construction, the cost of building materials, that we're going to build anything for less, that will be rented less or will be cheaper. That is not a dream that's going to come true. That's something that's being expressed as idealism and not as not being pragmatic, because it's not going to happen.
So would you take I think what I'm hearing you say is possibly a moratorium. Would you take that to the new city council to either slow things down or put a pause on the new zoning code?
Yeah, if we were to change the city zoning code, I would need the assistance of council. Mm-hmm. But as mayor, I can keep the same code, and I can invite in those people who don't think their voices were heard in their neighborhoods. Listen, there are our most affordable neighborhoods, and they should have a voice. I don't know them all, but I will bring together a group of stakeholders that include professionals, include voices on both sides, because I think what happens is that in government, we want to push these plans. We get our coalition together, and we push it. And then it's happened so many times. It happened with zoning. It happened with Interface Sanctuary, is that we see the controversies that follow and the lawsuits that then stop us from moving forward as a community. And I want to change that by listening to people and work with them to create that vision that we have for the future of Boise.
That was former police chief Mike Masterson speaking to our Morning Edition host George Prentice about why he's running for Boise mayor. Let's turn to someone who has made affordable housing in Boise a top issue. Joseph Evans is a U.S. Army veteran and has 2 degrees from Boise State. He sat down with Morning Edition host George Prentice to talk about his campaign and how he's certain that there will be a runoff election. Let's take a listen.
You envision Boise as a city where everyone can feel safe and secure in their rights and freedoms. Can you speak to what I'm assuming is how you and others may not currently feel safe and secure in rights and freedoms?
George, absolutely. One of the key things is over the last 4 years, we've seen an awful lot of issues related to government overreach. We've seen the state come down hard on women's reproductive rights. We've seen issues develop with regards to our choices in medicine. You know, despite the reduction in violent crime here in the state of Idaho, and in particularly inside city limits, we've continued to see an increase in police overreaction to individual encounters that have resulted in fatalities as well as injuries to people. We continue to see issues with the way our government spends our money and where it's prioritized in order to favor select individuals over the general pool that we originally intended the money to go to, as far as helping the community, lifting us all up instead of select individuals. So this is one of the things where I want to be able to see Boise create an economy and create a community network that lifts all boats with the rising tide, as opposed to picking and choosing.
Let's talk about finding and keeping a place to live. I've been reading that you have been a renter. Tell me if it's none of my business, but what is your current housing situation?
My current housing situation is the minivan. You're actually listening to me from campaign headquarters right now outside of a laundromat. I am homeless. I'm working homeless. I do have a job. I am able to maintain well with regards to a number of issues, so people don't see me as the guy on the street corner when we encounter in day-to-day interactions. And this comes down to an issue of, we simply do not have enough housing in the right range to facilitate housing for the people that are working below median wage. Right now, median wage consists of about $36,000, $37,000. Right now, that's the average income for your clerk, your entry-level jobs, just about anywhere in the Treasure Valley. That's not enough in order to support an individual, support a family in the current rental market, let alone the housing market with the accelerated prices that we're dealing with right now.
There are those who point to the marketplace as a solution, but what can the city do?
The biggest thing the city can do is get out of the way of what is ultimately opportunity. The market does have an awful lot of flexibility as far as what it can and cannot do as far as answering the question of a home ownership, rehoming of individuals who have been displaced. We talk about the fact that we need about 4,000 new houses a year, 4,000 new homes, residences a year in order to support sustained growth here in the Treasure Valley. Yet we're currently looking at displaced individuals, and we're already seeing a number of families that are moving back in with parents and grandparents in order to maintain a standard of living that we've become used to here in the Treasure Valley. The number of individuals right now that are living out of RVs, you know, that were lent to them by parents, by grandparents, in order to give them something that at least resembles housing, you know, during this time of crisis.
Mr. Evans, are you saying that the city should get out of the way of the free market?
The market's going to take the path of least resistance. Now, what that means for Boise is going to be variable. Now, one of the things that Mike Masterson is looking at is expansion by taking over what he considers low-quality agricultural ground out south of the freeway in order for expansion. This is something that he needs to do before the builders start building out there so they can take advantage of the upzone that's was recently passed. Whereas for most individuals that have been working inside Boise, what we're looking at is more of an up rather than out. Now, if we're going to incentivize an up rather than out, part of it is looking at what the red tape and requirements are in order to create opportunity in the building of condominiums, addressing issues of using the multiplexes that have been allowed, such as duplex and triplex, even the quadplexes that have been allowed in the neighborhoods under the new upzone. We need to make sure that the cost associated with that construction is reduced enough from the city side of things in order to interest the market in creating those opportunities for housing.
So are you talking then about what, reductions of fees at the city level?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk about public safety. I think it's fair to say that that is a centerpiece of much of what this race is being defined by. What is your experience with the Boise Police Department?
Boise Police Department in general is one of the best police departments I've had the opportunity to encounter, you know, in my travels around the United States. The vast majority of the police officers, you know, law enforcement officers that work within BPD grew up here. They understand the community. They work well with the community. In general, none of them are at risk as part of doing their job. Now, what that represents with the way our current hiring methodology works, or our recruitment methodology for the BPD, we've been stepping away from maintaining a homegrown peace officer corps. We've been recruiting from out of state. We've been bringing people in who don't necessarily understand the community. And in the time that it takes them to adjust and adapt, we've run into issues. So I think this is an issue where we need police officers with better training. We need more homegrown officers. And we need to approach the issue in that more police does not necessarily mean better policing.
Securing more than half of the votes cast in an election is a significant task. So I have to ask, what is your expectation of the results of this election?
My expectation of the results of this election on November 7th is it will be forced into a runoff. I do not believe any of the four candidates are going to be able to secure 50% of the ballot initially, which is why the two-person runoff is going to end up happening.
Am I hearing you say that your intention is to force a runoff?
Absolutely.
And is your intention to force a runoff between the incumbent and Mike Masterson?
Absolutely not. Reason why is because I do not consider myself an outsider. I grew up here in Boise. I grew up here in the Treasure Valley. I grew up with an understanding of the diversity that created a lot of the situation that exists right now, including the immigrations from California, Oregon, Washington, and around the nation. Let's be honest, from around the world. Our refugee population here represents, you know, countries from around the world. We speak over 90 different languages inside this city. I do not feel that the runoff will actually be between Mike Masterson and Mayor McClain. I honestly believe the runoff will be between me and one of the others because I am homegrown. I did grow up here in Idaho.
Let's talk about getting your messaging out. Mounting a campaign in 2023 is a formidable challenge financially. How are you doing that with what I have to assume are limited funds?
No, they are absolutely limited funds. A lot of it happens to be taking advantage of the open forums that have been created for the mayoral candidates. A campaign on what is less than a shoestring budget, while you have two major candidates, both of which brought in nearly $250,000 apiece, represents a significant issue.
What is working or what will work for you to push back against a lot of advertising?
Most of it is making sure that people understand that there is another choice. Making sure that those people who are dissatisfied with progress represented under the last 4 years with regards to the Supreme Court of the United States decision in Dobbs, how that's affected laws, legislation, and healthcare here in the state of Idaho, what it represents to individual autonomy and personal rights, especially with regards to the COVID lockdowns. The idea that we actually are more interested in expanding the jail during a time of one of the lowest violent crime incident rates in Boise's history. I think we definitely need to make sure that it is time for the people to actually stand up and recognize that right now the defenders of liberty exist with our libraries, with our school boards, and with our city councils, as far as individual autonomy, rights, and making sure that those people who are in charge, the people we assign to be stewards of our resources, take the job seriously and respect our rights as individuals.
That was Joseph Evans, one of the four candidates for the job of Boise mayor. Up next is Aaron Reese. He came to the Treasure Valley about 3 years ago, and he's not running on many of the issues that the other three candidates are focused on. In fact, he told our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, that no one should vote for him. Now, before we continue, we need to mention that this conversation includes the topic of suicide, which was a motivating factor for Reese to get into the mayor's race. So let's take a listen.
Tell me about your time in Boise. How long have you been here in the Treasure Valley?
I first came to the Treasure Valley about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for a place where I could be safe from the guardianship laws in this country. Mm. And Idaho was actually a good spot for that. And it was very near to my attorney in Utah.
I think it's fair to say that a centerpiece of your being in this race is bodily autonomy.
Yeah, it's everything.
Why?
First and foremost, I've known what it's like to really be without it and how important it is to have this. And I'm, as just a citizen of the planet, I'm mortified that the United States has chosen, or at least 9 people in costume have chosen to undo the protections of Roe v. Wade.
9 people in costume as in the Supreme Court.
Those are they.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, we should all, I'm not done protesting that, actually. Mm-hmm. The day of, I set my birth certificate and passport and social security card on fire.
Can I pause you there? Have you tried to replace any of those?
I've been able to replace my driver's license, although mm-hmm. it, instead of having my old signature, it has my change.org petition as my legal signature.
Okay, so let me go there and tell me if this is none of my business.
It's all your business.
Are you legally changing your name?
I am, in fact, yes.
To?
Suicidal.
that puts me back on my heels. So,
of course, yeah.
But that would be how you would sign everything, good and bad.
The way I currently sign every document is with change.org, petition for legal suicide in America, underscores between the words. I think every citizen needs the right to the full parameters of their life and to decide what that is. And only when we start acting like our lives are really on the line in this battle for bodily autonomy, whether it be the protections granted by Roe v. Wade or the concurrent protections based on that precedent granted by Griswold v. Connecticut, Brown v. Board of Education, the Oglethorpe case, etc. It was said in the dissent or in the concurrence of the overturning of Roe v. Wade that they're the next major battle. I mean, they're going to be coming for things like interracial marriage and things like that. Mm-hmm. Everyone should be as concerned as they possibly can about the right that they would have to their own bodies.
Please don't take this the wrong way, but if I were to ask you what your true intention for your campaign is, in other words, there is a pretty good chance you may not win this campaign.
I'm sure of it, and I encourage no one to vote for me.
What's your motivation here?
Last year in America, nearly 50,000 people killed themselves. And those people can't all be crazy, and they can't all be wrong. And we live in a world where the basic human needs are withheld from the proletariat in exchange for the exploitation of their labor. And that is untenable with many people's health, dignity, willingness to live. People are dying. People are dying right here in Boise just this year. This has affected people in my life. This has affected people in your life, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. This has affected me. Just in 2019, I found the state of things to be so untenable that I felt that way myself.
My sense is I'm sensing shadows that are long and wide in your life. But may I also ask where there might be any joy in your life?
Oh my God, there's so much joy.
Okay.
I could just as easily, and I'm tempted all the time to talk about the misery and the abuse and et cetera.
Do you like Boise?
Love Boise.
Okay.
And I really love Pogas Basin. I used to work up there. No, I could just as easily say to you or anyone else that I've lived a long, full life.
Can I assume that this campaign has also given you the opportunity to meet a lot of folks for the first time?
Yeah, some people come up to me and thank me. Other people run screaming in the other direction. It's been a mixed bag the whole way through.
Has it been enjoyable? Has it been fruitful for you thus far? Or has it been a challenge?
Both.
You are very much a part of a very formal process now, right? And it's okay if people don't vote?
As long as I don't win, it's going to be okay.
but for those who really embrace their vote, you're okay with that?
I'd say something along the lines of good cop, bad cop, red cop, blue cop.
Help me out with that. Flesh that out for me.
There's a contingency of people who say that all cops are, I'll say, Batman. And both blue and red are two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot of other ways to govern a society. I've lived in many parts of the world that do this. In Israel, they even have the Likud party, not that, that hasn't been co-opted or that their system full of, seven or eight different parties, whatever it is, hasn't been ruined. In Switzerland, they have every canton, like every state kind of, brings someone to the table and they all have to agree. In Australia, they have a totally different system. And in Canada also, we really need to get out of the two-party mindset. So I don't know. If you care about your vote, go for Joe.
but indeed, I mean, this is a nonpartisan race.
It's nonpartisan until it's extraordinarily partisan. I've noticed in some of the articles, I could maybe look them up for you, but they say the incumbent mayor, they say the ex-police chief, and then they say libertarian candidate Joe. And that's when this spin kind of, I think, it's nonpartisan until someone gets accused more or less of being a libertarian.
What's interesting is I don't think there is or has been a tag for you.
Yeah, when I signed up for the opportunity to do this, I had three options and then other. And the options were blue, red, libertarian, and then you could just fill in the blanks. And yeah, I just wrote my petition down.
Great, good luck in the coming days.
Thank you. I'll need it.
And I think what I've heard is that it's not about a contest. It's not about an election for you.
No.
Right?
That's fair. And it's about our friends. It's about the kindness of the human spirit withering in and under the hardship of the economic patriarchal tyranny that is an economy run on violence and exploitation of human labor.
And that conversation needs to continue.
And that conversation needs to be expanded. And I would encourage everyone to really wonder what we can do so that we don't keep losing people this way, because they're not crazy and they're not wrong.
That was Aaron Reese, one of four candidates running for Boise mayor. Let's continue our look at the four candidates in the Boise mayoral race with current mayor Lauren McClain, who has been in the job since 2019, when she was the first woman elected to lead Idaho's capital city. She sat down with our Morning Edition host to talk about her continuing vision for the city of Boise. So let's take a listen to that conversation with her and George Prentice.
I'm going to take you back to what I would assume you would agree would be one of the challenging times. It seems like forever ago when we think about what happened. And you chose to share with us something that intersected your professional and personal lives. A time when there were pandemic-inspired protests outside your home. Also, there were what you called sinister threats against you and your family that prompted a security detail. You ended your early morning trail runs and other compromises. But talk to me about what you learned from that. Most importantly, the lens that you look through when you recommit to a life in public office.
You know, George, I appreciate the question. It's a hard question because I often try not to go back to those experiences. And while I want to say our entire community experienced difficulties and challenges like no other time before, and I deeply appreciate the way Boiseans responded to help each other, how we built partnerships and efforts to support businesses, schools, teachers, childcare providers. In the midst of all that, we had to make tough calls. And you're right, they were really early in my term. I will often say my office was still devoid of furniture as we were determining how, with the governor, with others, we could act to protect Boiseans at the city level, because it was so important we use a through line of putting people first. And that wasn't without consequences. I'd say the good consequences are that we emerged from this pandemic beating the odds, unlike other cities, where our businesses are thriving. We encountered challenges but responded as a community. And so I'd say one of the things that I take away from that time is how deeply committed Boiseans are to acting in the moment to meet challenges with an eye towards the future, ensuring that we remain the city that we are for those that come after us. But I'd also say it was really hard and not something that I like to think back on when we started having protesters at our house. When I took the step after talking with many medical professionals to protect Boiseans, and they showed up at my house en masse with weapons, with a lot of rhetoric,
pitchforks, torches
once it was dark, and they came every week. And what I gained from that is a realization that in the face of really tough things, I'm going to continue to make tough calls to protect Boiseans. I feel bolstered by the community when doing that, that my family grew closer, and my community, my neighbors, became like family. And still to this day, our neighborhood has changed so much for the better because we took care of each other, and they sought to help take care of my family during that time.
I want to ask about another turning point, and that was the hiring and ultimately the resignation of Ryan Lee, former chief of police, putting all of the legal proceedings to the side. You have said that hindsight is always 20/20, and quote, I have learned so much from that. What did you learn?
Yeah, well, I learned that in a time when policing around the country is really tough, there are a lot of things that have to be juggled in making those decisions, both in supporting someone that was selected to lead, in supporting a staff of police officers at Boise Police Department, and responding to the community's expectations that policing evolve with our community. But I want to be clear on this one because I feel as though there's a lot of misinformation out there. This was a process that started about 4 years now. I wasn't yet mayor. Mm-hmm. The chief at the time retired right before an election. And a process was started to hire someone. In January, there were multiple panels that interviewed the candidates. There was an agency panel, so think law enforcement from around the region, a city panel of city staff, and a community panel of leaders of nonprofits and advocates within the community. And they selected three finalists. One of them was Ryan Lee, and I offered him the job, and it didn't work out. I've also learned that we just have to recognize that sometimes things don't work out, and I am so honored and grateful to Ron Weiniger for stepping in when his city needed him most and serving as chief alongside a great team of other directors at the city of Boise.
You want every resident to be within a 10-minute walk to a park. Where are we?
I do. So, you know, I think that this is a great pivot. And to point out that in the last 4 years, we've had a lot of challenges as a community. Mm-hmm. Yet despite and through all of those challenges, our team has continued to make goals and deliver on results for Boiseans. And one of those goals that we set was to make sure that every, I'd say, Boise kid can walk safely mm-hmm. to a park within 10 minutes. We're just over 70% of the way there with new purchases of land that we've made in the last 3 years. But I just know that because we set a goal, we are measuring it and we're making progress. And that's what I'm so excited about is we've built momentum on this, on housing and other things. We're measuring that progress. We're going to keep at it until every kid in Boise can walk safely to a park within 10 minutes.
Is your answer just to the layperson on what a city can do to make housing affordable, more affordable? Is it your impact on the inventory and therefore, and then that changes the marketplace? Construction,
sure.
There are projects,
yeah.
Et cetera, but most of us kind of like where we live.
Yeah.
So what can a mayor do about that affordability?
So there's, what I'll say to people is there's no one silver bullet.
Yeah.
So whether you're saying you're just going to move into this area of desert land and build homes there, or you're just going to do another project, that's not how this works. You've got to be creative and work with a team of people and build partnerships in the community to figure out really like an all hands on deck, but all ideas are possible approach to housing. Because there are things a city can do, like our land bank that I worked on as a council member, doubled down on as mayor. I'm so excited to see the progress in that space where we've taken land that was, you know, weedy lots next to a grocery store or gravel lots next to a fire station. And those are becoming homes for Boiseans at working incomes and below, so deeply affordable homes. That's a strategy. We've created incentives because we don't build houses at the city of Boise. Developers do. Mm-hmm. So we went out and asked, what is it that you need to see to be a partner in ensuring that Boiseans who are seeking homes can find them at their budgets? So we developed incentives, policy incentives, and we've measured those and we've changed them as we've needed to. We even did some crowdsourcing ideas. We took the innovation team at the city of Boise and we talked with hundreds of people around the city and said, what should we do? Well, just a couple weeks ago, our pilot project for tiny homes in Boise, the first one that was permitted in the city, now has people living in it. We're going to learn from that and do more of that. And those were residents' ideas. And of course, there's the matter of making sure that we've got enough homes for Boiseans and the modern zoning code that updated exclusionary 1960s codes, you know, from well before many people in the city were even born, now updated and creates a map with all of the above approach, incentives for affordability, incentives for where you build and how it looks and whether or not it's people oriented. And we're putting that, you know, more homes for more people mixed with residents along the busiest streets in Boise. So in the long run, we can support transportation, but because there's space there, and we can create more homes for Boiseans at Boise budgets. So it really is an all-of-the-above approach. It's been my highest priority because of what I learned from so many Boiseans as a council member and on those doors. And again, this time, we've built momentum. We are demonstrating results against the goals that we set. We cannot afford to pause and start over.
I want to end with that zoning code, because I think a lot of people forget how emotional that evening was when that vote came. And that after months and even years of conversation and outreach and public input, there were 18, I think it was something like 18 conditions on top of that zoning code that were organic and that came from the community. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, I'll speak a little backwards. I'll start with that night. And that is, the council was responsive to the community. Over multiple nights of testimony, we heard from hundreds of people, 2-1 in favor of the changes. But council heard suggestions for feedback and built them into the new ordinance that will go into effect on December 1st. They passed it unanimously, and I was so proud of that. And that night was emotional, I would say, in many respects, because we just spent, you know, 3-4 nights together hearing from Boiseans about their love for the city and their hopes for the future. And for me, that's what this was about, was our hopes for the future, ensuring that we have a city where everybody who works here can live here. And when I think back to how we started it, it had begun before I was mayor. I changed the committee, got some pushback from that, but I wanted it to be a committee that was reflective of our neighborhoods, of the diversity of opinion, the diversity of experience. We created a citizens committee of over 30 folks from all walks of life. They had a lot of debates themselves on the merits of this. And there was, you know, one draft that got changed a lot after hundreds of people showed up to have conversations about this and give feedback at school libraries, in parks. We had thousands of people do the survey. The committee heard all of this, made changes themselves, presented it to council. This is a document that embodies the vision that we have for the future of our city that was impacted by thousands of Boiseans, as the best work in this city always has been. And it creates the map that allows us to ensure that we've got police stations in our neighborhoods, fire stations to keep people safe, parks within 10-minute walks, pathways, and ultimately transit, a functioning transit system on our busiest streets that will be homes to people and to businesses, thanks to the work of so many that made our modern zoning code possible and gives us that vision and the toolkit to ensure that we're a safe and welcoming city for everyone well into the future.
That was current mayor of Boise, Lauren McLean, speaking with our Morning Edition host, George Prentice. You can find all our interviews with the candidates for Boise mayor and all of our other election coverage on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.